And we are on air for Fan for Racing Radio's NASCAR Weekend Preview and Hot Topic Sound Off. Tonight we're previewing the races at Dover Motor Speedway. We'll start off with some short track racing news, and then we'll get into the ARCA Menards Series East at Dover, the preview, and a few updates from the West, as well as the ARCA Menards Series. 9 o'clock, we have our guest, Nick Sanchez is coming on board from Rev Racing and the Drive for Diversity program. He won last weekend at Talladega Super Speedway, so we are looking forward to talking to him about that. He also drives for BJ McLeod Motorsports in the Xfinity Series. Then at 9:15, we'll get into a few updates from the Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend, but we'll let you know when they will be racing next. At 9:30, we'll start with our Xfinity Series at Dover Preview and then move on to the Cup Series at Dover Preview. 10 o'clock, of course, is NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fan for Racing crew. And I'm hoping that it's more than me and Jay, but it might be just me and Jay here tonight. So with that, let me welcome our co-host for tonight, Jay Huglin. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I know looking forward to seeing if Tommy gets to join us. I know Andy said he was working late again, and Mike's on the road, I guess, in the air, more appropriately.
Right. Yes. Hopefully they'll be able to come back at some point next week, and we'll have them back on board here. And I'm hoping Tommy is available for our hot topic. Hopefully we'll hear from him before the 10 o'clock hour. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with some short track news. There's quite a lot that's been happening, and there's some really great articles that both Racing America as well as Flow Sport Racing. But to look at the upcoming schedule, there are so many races taking place, and is probably at a track somewhere near you. So if you can get out to the racetrack, that would be awesome. The Modifieds of Mayhem will be at Black Flag Speedway this weekend, Friday, April 29th, 8 p.m. Eastern. Then there's the Carolina Sprint Tour at Carolina Speedway, 6:15 Eastern on Friday. So that's a couple of big races on Friday night. And then a whole slew of races on Saturday. These are all at Racing America, the Golf Course Racing Series at Mobile, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the Ohio 300 at Shady Bowl, 5 p.m. Eastern, and the Tri-Track, I'm saying that real fast, at Monadnock, Saturday at, I can't quite see, it's at 6:45 p.m. Eastern. The Spring Fling 100 at Mount Cumbrae at 7 p.m. Eastern. There's a whole slew of them here. Okay, one more. Carolina Prolate Models at Carolina at Goodyear. That's Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern. So quite a lot of racing there between Friday and Saturday.
There is, and this is where you can see some of these future NASCAR stars. Look at one of the articles I was reading on Racing America, Caleb Johnson, as he's getting experience in the Carolina Pro Late Model Series. Take a look at that. We see this as some of these drivers, Josh Berry, one that most prevalently comes to mind, this is where they get their start. This is where they get noticed. So, again, you can get access to them a lot easier at the smaller tracks or local tracks like that. Great fan experience when you go to these places.
Yeah, Josh Sauter is looking for his second Pro Late Model win of the season. He's right now the points leader as well. So there's a nice article about him over there. Capello strikes again in the Spears Pro Late Models at Kern County Raceway. Another big win for him in that series. So just so many good things happening in racing.
I know my dad will tell you this, the modifieds, especially the NASCAR, what used to be the Whelen Modifieds, the fastest cars in NASCAR under the NASCAR banner. If you get a chance anywhere to go watch these Modifieds, I highly recommend it.
Yes, indeed. I know, I think Andy was saying he went to the Modified race out at Stafford last weekend instead of going to Talladega.
Yeah, he was up there, Ryan Preece, making one of his starts. I know he still runs the Modified. We think about it, somebody at high level in NASCAR. Oh, he did. Oh, wow. I know there's a related article, and I don't remember where I saw it, that Ryan Preece really is expected to probably take over the number 10 at Stuart Haas, and that shows why. I mean, he races everything mm-hmm. he's in. He's performing at a high level, given the right opportunity and car.
Yes, indeed. If we move over to flow racing, Jay, there's the first is taking place over this weekend, starting tonight. Then there's the 2022 ARCA Menards Series East at Dover Motor Speedway. You'll be able to watch that on Friday, April the 29th at 4:30 p.m. Then at 5 p.m. From the 29th through the 30th, there's the 2022 Funny Car Chaos at Kine Valley Raceway. Then there's the 2022 USAC Sprints at Bloomington Speedway at 5:45. You've got the 2022 Tazos All-Star Circuit of Champions at Lernerville Speedway. These are on Saturday, 5:45 on Saturday, 2022, honoring Alex, season opener at Utica Rome Speedway. 6 p.m. is the 2022 Billy Wynn Classic at Bedford Speedway. 6:55, the weekly racing at Marshalltown Speedway. 7 p.m., Sprint Car Weekend at South Boston Speedway. 7:45, you get the Brunel Herseth Classic at Silver Dollar Speedway. 2022, weekly racing at Ocean Speedway at 8:05 p.m. There's just so much racing this weekend, via Flow Racing or ARCA Race, RacingAmerica.com. So if you're not a subscriber yet, I highly recommend it.
I was going to say, and I know we've promoted it and talked about it, if you can't get to watch on Flow Racing, I'd have to apologize on behalf of my dad. I think he uses up that bandwidth because every night I talk to him, that's what he's doing. I mean, you know, he can't get out, and especially not coming out of Minnesota to some of these tracks. But getting to watch it, yeah, he wears Flow Racing out.
Good. That's why they're there. I'm glad to hear it. And obviously he enjoys it.
Yeah, he does a lot of the dirt watching, but again, that's the opportunity you have there. This year, over the past 2 years, they put this deal together. You know, maybe he'll get more interested in, say, the ARCA Menards series you mentioned got coming up. And some of these late model races, again, that's where some of the dirt track drivers, it's evolution or moving up. We see them start on dirt. You know, Austin Dillon, the Dillon boys, Ricky Stenhouse, move into asphalt and on up. So, I mean, again, getting to know I like the fact of when these drivers get to, that say, the Xfinity or Trucks or Cup, you know who they are and possibly have the chance to have met them and know them.
Exactly right. Going back to Racing America, they have a couple of really great articles. Deconstructing the Cup Series finish at Talladega. And then Trackhouse Racing is a vision come to life early in 2022. Another great article to read about Justin Marks, one of the owners at Trackhouse Racing. There's one up at ARCA Racing as well, going back to his racing roots. And now he's a team owner at NASCAR's top level of racing. It's really great to see. You know, if they don't make it, a lot of drivers make it as a race car driver, but some drivers move on to become crew chiefs. Some of those drivers move on to become team owners. So it's racing is not the only option that a lot of these grassroots racing drivers have as they look to the future and how they might evolve with their careers.
Well, and we talk about it, it goes both ways. Talking about going out to the track or watching it on there. I know Dad said William Byron as well as Chase Briscoe were running some dirt races. We've seen Byron do some asphalt races. There again, you never know who you might get to see at some of these tracks. And the learning that takes place for other drivers that get to race with them, the experience, the connections, the friendships that are built, that's undeniable.
It really is. It really is. That's why grassroots racing is such a big part of what happens at NASCAR, because this is the proving ground for a lot of these drivers. And a lot of the Cup drivers are going back to those racing roots and racing at these tracks, and it makes them better Cup Series drivers. So and it really elevates it, the racing for those drivers racing at those short tracks as well.
You know, you bring up a good point there. We've seen that with the talent that someone like Kyle Larson, we've seen Christopher Bell, Chase Briscoe bring. Some of these guys, like you said, are going back and picking up more races like that to help improve that. They've seen that, you know, and Kyle Busch has always been a component of that, that he wants to be racing. And I know the Cup level, they want to try and protect it for their sponsor and the Cup Series. But that just makes him that much better of a driver. So, you know, it's a tough boat to be in. I understand it's a risk versus reward, but there is definitely some reward there.
Yeah, look at William Byron is the best example of that. He was struggling. And when Hendrick Motorsports opened the door and they were encouraged to go back out to the short tracks and back out to do some short track racing, he's done much better this season, and it's been really good to see. I think he was the first driver to get 2 wins this year in the Cup Series.
Right. Yeah, he was. And we've seen that. We know he was due an inline to have that breakout year, just like we waited and saw in Chase Elliott. But I think you're right. I think that little bit, just that extra experience, pick up a victory, even if with it being in a pro late model, the confidence, I mean, so many things to build upon that then transfers over as a driver, as a person, as well as maybe even accepting defeat, you know, being humble and understanding. So, again, so many benefits to it.
There definitely is. Okay, Jay, I know we're a little bit early, but I'm going to go ahead and move on to the ARCA Racing Series. The race that's coming up this weekend is at Dover Motor Speedway, and the ARCA Menards Series East is going to be racing that General Tire 125 on Saturday, April the 29th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be available for live streaming at Flow Racing, and fans will definitely want to tune in for this race because it's going to be a good one. Sal and I were talking last Monday about how tight some of this racing is for a lot of these teams. There's a lot of information here, but I'm going to go to I got an email today about the ARCA Menards Series. There's so many things that are going on. There's a pre-race notebook here with some stats. The defending series champion, Sammy Smith, enters the General Tire 125 looking for his third consecutive series victory. He won the opener, the first two races of the season at New Smyrna Speedway and Five Flags Speedway, and he has a commanding 12-point lead in the series standings over current runner-up, Ray. So we might see that tighten up a little bit. Oh, he's not available. Tommy's not available tonight. Okay. We might see that tighten up a little bit after this race at Dover.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, Sammy Smith, so dominant, coming off the championship win. We've seen this in the past, sometimes what they call the sophomore slump or a championship lull when you come off winning a championship. That has not been the case with Sammy Smith. I mean, he just came out full force on fire.
He did. The last driver to win three consecutive races in the East Series did it in 2021, and that was Ty Gibbs. He had wins at Iowa Speedway, the Milwaukee Mile, and Bristol Motor Speedway. And those races were combination races with the ARCA Menards Series. So that's kind of interesting. The General Tire 125 will feature two breaks at or near laps 40 and laps 80. Teams will only be allowed to change tires during those two breaks. Any other tire changes will need to be approved by ARCA officials. So something to keep in mind when you're watching. The starting lineup will be set at a combined practice qualifying session starting at 1:15 on Friday, and the driver with the fastest lap will earn the general pole award. The track record at Dover is 22.909 seconds, or 157.143 miles per hour, set by Harrison Burton in 2018. So a couple of track records there to keep an eye on as well.
Well, and it's really interesting here for Dover International Speedway. That's a track that they run on the cup level, so all the way up through the cup level. So these drivers that are getting experience here in the East Series, as they move up, you know, if they get, say, select Xfinity Series starts or Truck Series starts, they're going to pick tracks like this that they are used to, or actually not all of them, but maybe we can ask Nick Sanchez about that, but ones they're familiar with. So getting this opportunity to run on Dover, a huge thing for the ARCA East.
Absolutely. And by the way, Jay, it is now called, I looked it up this morning because I wanted to make sure, it's called Dover Motor Speedway now. They posted
you know,
31. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, when I said that, I was like, I don't think that sounds right. So thank you for that.
Okay. I wanted to make sure, too, because I have a tendency to want to say international as well. Dover's hosted 31 ARCA Menards Series races dating back to the series' inaugural season in 1987. The first 10 races were held in combination with what is now the Xfinity Series and were won by drivers registered in that series. Kimmy Spencer won the first standalone East race at Dover in 1998. Other East winners at Dover include Dale Shaw, Matt Kobielak, Dale Quarterly, Andy Santeri, Tim Andrews, Sean Casey, Eric Almirola, Brett Moffitt, Darrell Wallace Jr., Corey LaJoy, Austin Hill, Chase Cabray, Kyle Benjamin, Harrison Burton, Ruben Garcia Jr., Sam Mayer, and Ty Gibbs. Only Moffitt, Hill, and Mayer have multiple victories, each having won twice. So Tim Andrews, Eric Almirola, Austin Hill, Chase Cabray all scored their first series victory at Dover, so that's kind of cool. Taylor Gray will become the first driver to race in Ford Mustang within the ARCA Menards Series platform. The body style has been approved for competition before the 2022 season and will make his platform debut at Dover, so there's another thing to look for there. Leland Honeyman will make his... Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, that's an exciting thing, and you got another one coming there. Go ahead with Leland.
Yeah. Oh, do you have this, Jay? I wasn't sure if you had it.
No, I don't have that.
Okay. Leland Honeyman is making his third career East start with his first at Dover on Friday. Honeyman won the General Tire Pole Award at the last East race at Five Flags Speedway and finished a career best second. So we'll see what he can do at Dover. Roger Carruth, the current championship points leader in the Menards Series, is entered to make his first East appearance of the season. Carruth finished third in the East standings in 2021. Then there's Venturini Motorsports. Their team will field four this weekend with defending ARCA Menards Series West champion Jesse Long, Connor Jones, Jake Finch, and Jonathan Schaefer at the wheel. I think there's an article about Jonathan over at ARCA Racing as well. Team owner Bruce Cook enters the Dover race with some momentum at his back. He's coming off a West Series win last Saturday night with the rookie Landon Lewis at the wheel. Christian Rose, who is seventh in the East standings, is driving the number 42 Chevrolet at Dover. So that's good news for Christian. I hope he has a good run there. Smith has been at the point for 274 laps so far this season, nearly three times as many laps in the lead as Taylor Gray in second with just 99. Leyland Honeyman is third with 24 laps led. Now, the General Tire 125 will be streamed live, as we said earlier, on Flow Racing starting at 5:30 p.m. Eastern on Friday, April the 29th. Any other thoughts there, Jay, as I go through the news and notes there?
No, one big thing I look at there, 17 drivers entered, if I counted right, on the full entry list. You mentioned some of the ones that are making some starts. That can really mix up when we talk about the point standings. If Rajah Carruth were to have kind of a rough, or I'm sorry, Sammy Smith here in the East Series, have a rough night, can really affect the point standing. And not that I see that from him. We haven't seen any chink in his armor yet so far this year, though.
Okay. Keep in mind, Jonathan Schaefer that I mentioned earlier is a dirt racer, but he's looking for a really strong finish at Dover. He's an accomplished dirt racer, and there is an article about him over at ArcaRacing.com, so something to check out there prior to the race is over. Let's look at the entry list real quick and catch those people that we haven't already mentioned that are going to be racing this weekend. Do you want to go from the bottom up, Jay?
All right. We talked about Leyland Honeyman in the 0-2 driving for Tyler Young with Andrew Abbott as the crew chief. Then you got Stephanie Moyer in a Hillenburg Toyota, Pennsylvania, in the 0-1.
Okay. And in the number 60 is Daniel Escato from Leon, Mexico. He's driving for Josh Williams with John Holmes on the pit box. And then in that number 55 for Venturini Motorsports is Jonathan Schaefer from Ashland, Ohio. He'll be driving that 55 Toyota with Dave Liner on the pit box.
And as always, we've got Brad Smith and his cell phone team in the number 48 coming out of Shelby, Michigan with Leo Kreiger as his crew chief. And then the pairing mentioned of Bruce Cook and Sean Samuels. Samuels, the crew chief, Cook, the owner, with Christian Rose in that number 42 West Virginia Tourism machine, Toyota machine.
Driving the number 30s is Max Gutierrez from Mexico City, Mexico. He's driving for team owner Mark Rett, and will be driving that tough belt Ford with Mark Rett on top of the pit box. In the number 25 is Jake Finch from Lynn Haven, Florida, driving the Phoenix Construction Toyota. Kathy Venturini is the team owner, but Kevin Reed Jr. will be on top of his pit box.
Another regular, Eric Caudell machine, the number 22 coming out of Piedmont, Oklahoma. Jeremy Petty calling the shots for that Chevrolet. And then we mentioned here one of the Venturinis, Jesse Lovell, being the number 20 Toyota for them, with Shannon Roersch in his ear.
Driving that number 18 for Kyle Busch is Sammy Smith from Johnston, Iowa. They have Mark McMarlin on top of the pit box, and Chad Johnston is on top of the David Gilliland Racing Ford number 17, with Taylor Gray from Mooresville, North Carolina, behind the wheel.
One of the other Venturinis here, that Connor Jones number 15 Toyota, Kevin Reed will be calling the shots there. And then Tommy V Jr. In a Hillenburg Chevrolet, the number 12, Trey Galgun, the crew chief.
Okay, and driving the number 11 is Ed Pompa from Ballston Spa, New York. He'll be driving the Andy Hillenburg Ford with Dick Doheny on top of the box. And Tim Monroe will be crew chiefing his own car, the Andy Hillenburg Toyota number 10. Tim Monroe is from Elmwood, Illinois.
And the final entry we got mentioned getting an E-Series start here, Rajah Carruth in the Max Siegel-owned number six Chevrolet, Brad Parrott. There's a name you know as the crew chief.
Yeah, he's a good one. Okay, there are a lot of good crew chiefs in the ARCA Menards series. Before we run out of time, I want to make sure that I let you know when the next scheduled races are. We talked about the ARCA Menards Series East racing this weekend. The Dutch Boy 150 in the ARCA Menards Series will be on May 14th, 1 p.m. Central. That's 2 p.m. Eastern at Kansas Speedway. Now, that race will be televised on Fox Sports 1, so that's pretty cool. In the West, it's the Portland 100, June 4th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific. That's 7:30 p.m. Eastern at Portland International Raceway. That race will be streamed on Flow Racing. And we've been mentioning this for a while now. The Calypso Lemonade 150 is the second race of the Sioux Chief Showdown on June the 11th, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern at Iowa Speedway. And that will be televised on MAV TV. Jay, we mentioned the standings there for the ARCA Menards Series East. I think Raja, well, he's leading the ARCA Menards Series standings. Do you want to go over the ARCA East standings?
All right. We got Sammy Smith mentioned two wins already on the year, leading by 12 points over Taylor Gray, Leland Honeymoon, Willie Mullins, and Donald Seedig, a Canadian driver. Those are your top five. Other than the 12-point gap there from first to second, it's minus 12, minus 13, then you got minus 22, minus 23 through the top five. Six on back, Stephanie Moyer, Christian Rose, Steve Austin, Brad Smith all have two starts. So they sit seventh through ninth right now, ranging from 30 points back to 56 points back. And then we see several others, though, 10th on back. Max Gutierrez already has a top five, getting another start. Daniel Escato, Mason Diaz, Brandon Varney, Logan Mascara, and Ashton Higgins. Now, 16th is Jake Finch. We know he's in this weekend, Ed Pompa. So we'll see a little bit of a shuffling. And I just want to see, it's great to see we got two Mexican drivers in the race this weekend, along with the Canadian.
Yes, indeed. I love the international flavor of the ARCA Menards Series. It's really, it speaks to how much people value this series, not just the ARCA Menards Series, but the East and the West as well. I'm glad to see that as well, Jay. Now, coming up here at 9 o'clock, is our guest for tonight. In fact, he's here already, is Nick Sanchez. I'm so excited to have him back on the show. We had him on a week or so ago, and he won at Talladega Super Speedway. So first of all, Nick, I want to say congratulations to you, but then I also want to get your thoughts about, you know, with about 11 laps to go, you got shuffled back. What was your thoughts when that happened? And then how did you get your focus to get right in the right spot at the right time to take that victory?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me, and I really appreciate all the congratulations. It's kind of crazy because the race ended with 9 laps to go, so like 11 to go is pretty much 2 to go in essence. So, we got the lead, and, I had the 20 pushing me, and I knew I knew his game plan was first and foremost to stay with one of his teammates. I believe one of his teammates lined up in fourth on that restart. So, obviously, he left me. He kind of hung me out on the back straightaway, and I think I fell all the way back to 10th. At that point, I kind of thought my race was over. my chances of winning were over and done with, but apparently they weren't.
No, they weren't. You were able to keep your focus and be there going 3 wide at the finish. And I believe the other two drivers kind of took each other out, which opened the door for you.
Yeah, there was definitely some shuffling going on there, and, you know, luckily I had the momentum going into turn one, and obviously I think that's what carried me to the lead.
Exactly right. And talk about your emotions after winning. This was your second victory. You won at Kansas or Toledo last year?
It was Kansas.
Kansas. You won at Kansas the last race of the year, and then you came back, and early this season you've got a second win already.
Yeah, definitely great to get one early on, and, you know, definitely a weird way to win one under caution, you know, the race being decided by camera at least. But nevertheless, it's still the same feeling, you know, winning never gets old, best feeling on earth. And, you know, race three, obviously last year, that's kind of what got me rolling last year. And, you know, to get a win on race three versus race 20 last year is huge. And, you know, we have a lot of good tracks coming up for me and the team, and, you know, try to keep it rolling.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You do have a lot of good tracks. Kansas, the track where you won at before, is coming up next. What are your thoughts going into Kansas Speedway?
Yeah, just kind of clean up on my mistakes last year and, you know, capitalize on games of the car. So, obviously, we want to go outright win it. And, you know, I don't think we've won a race on sheer speed before. You know, I'd love to do that. I'd love to lead every lap, win, pole, everything. So that's kind of what I have going into Kansas, you know, to be on offense, not defense, and go attack and win.
What's different this year, Nick, from last year in at Rev Racing in the Arkham Menards series?
Yeah, at least from my end, I feel like I've put the same effort in. You know, obviously every race that goes by, I feel like I get better as a driver, more mature, more patient. But as far as Rev, you know, this year we just have a notebook. You know, I have a notebook. I think what I want in the car is a little bit more. We're starting to get more and more Chevrolet support, which is something we did not have last year. So all of those things, you know, culminate together to, you know, success. And obviously, I think everyone saw that in Talladega. You know, even though we won, kind of, I don't want to say by luck, but, you know, it was definitely interesting. You know, we were up front all day, and you know, just learning how to, you know, run up front regularly. And, you know, that's what me and my team were learning last year. And, you know, this year when we're running second, we're disappointed. We want to win. So last year when we were running second, we were happy. So just things like that. You know, getting used to it. But yeah, a lot of changes for the better.
Okay, absolutely. And by the way, I don't think it was luck that got that win to you at Talladega. I think you were in the right place at the right time. And you had a situation and the door was open. You took it. There's nothing wrong with that. I think you took advantage of the opportunity. And you did a great job. So we have Jay Huseman here. He's our co-host for tonight, and I know he has some questions for you. So, Jay?
All right. Thank you, Sharon. Again, congratulations, Nick, on the victory. You and Sharon kind of talking about it leads into my first question. If we go back a few weeks, Kyle Busch made the comments about backing into a win. Now, I know you said you want to win a race on sheer speed, and I understand that. But how often, when you think about it, does the fastest car win? You know, there's always circumstances that create it. So talk to the fans about that you probably – you lose more than you do win by unfortunate circumstances or different circumstances.
Yeah, you know, obviously super speedway racing, you know, if there's a track – if there's two tracks on a schedule that nothing's given no matter how much speed you think your car has – it's Daytona and Talladega. You know, we've actually, the past two races, we've had the fastest lap there, you know, take it for what it is. But, you know, we bring really fast cars, and, you know, it's like a game of chess, you know. And you don't, you know, last year I thought I did everything right, leading coming off the final corner, and I finished third. And, you know, this year it's not necessarily that me or my team did anything wrong. We just got unlucky there and lost the lead. But obviously, like I said, you know, it – as a weird way of working out, and, you know, just when you think you've lost it, you know, you're sitting in victory lane. But, you know, as far as Kansas last year, you know, we had a second-place car. I think we would have finished second. You know, as far as speed goes, we weren't going to beat the 18. So we just capitalized there in the restart. But, you know, this year, looking into it, you know, I want to be an offense. I want to be the 18 car in the race. And, you know, obviously I've learned to win them at the end, I guess you could say. But, you know, I want to for the first time, start off, you know, up front leading the race and kind of control it. And I think we're probably in better position than ever to do that.
Well, I certainly think you are. And with that, you kind of talked about that, the opportunity that Rev Racing gives and the step, we talk about it from the Xfinity to the Cup. How about from the ARCA Menards East to the main ARCA Menards series? Talk about that, the step up as far as that goes, getting to run tracks like Talladega now.
Yeah, obviously those tracks are the biggest things. And, you know, those are the most important tracks on the ARCA schedule because, you know, that's as long as you're in this sport, from trucks to cup, you're going to run there. So those are the ones that I've circled to, you know, me and my team have circled to put our best foot forward if we could choose. Because obviously it's the next level, you know, Xfinity, it's kind of what I'm looking at. And, you know, that's all the schedule consists of, those big tracks. So, you know, being able to run and win there, tracks like that, like Kansas, Talladega, and, you know, many other mile and a half, you know, that's big. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people might have a little more eyes on that than, you know, let's say a Toledo or a Berlin.
All right. The last question I got is with that, you've been with Rev Racing, and I know they've given you a great opportunity. When it comes to taking that next step or going to another team, talk about the opportunity. Sometimes, you know, it's not always the best opportunity, but you got to move up. And other times you kind of pass on certain deals waiting for the right opportunity to really hit with the team. And just off the top of my head, I want to say, look at Trackhouse Racing. I mean, they put together a great opportunity. Ross Chastain capitalized on it, but he's also taken some other rides that maybe weren't the best opportunity. So how do you balance that when you're making decisions on your career and how, when and how to advance?
Yeah, you know, luckily I've had a great group of guys and girls around me to guide me through my career. You know, one of them being Jefferson Hodges from the beginning. And, you know, every opportunity that comes available to me, we always look at it, you know, not in the moment, but in the future. You know, what is it going to do for me in the future? You know, is it something that's going to hurt me or help me? And, you know, we definitely think with a future in mind and, yeah, kind of take it as it comes, but hopefully this past weekend and many others will open the opportunities for me, and you know the better ones will come available. And you know, really right now I'm thinking long term, so I guess that's a good thing.
All right, well, that's some great insight. Again, congratulations on your win. Hope you carry that momentum forward. I know you got to get the battle now with your teammate there, Raja Karuth, for the points battle. Good luck with that. And I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon here.
Okay, I was trying to run down the Xfinity Series list. I didn't see your name on the entry list for the Xfinity Series this week. When is your next race in Xfinity?
My next race will actually be Charlotte on May 28th. So really looking forward to that with BJ McLeod, Motorsports.
Okay, and that's a part-time opportunity that you have there with BJ McLeod Motorsports. And I think we talked about this before. There's not a lot of difference, you said, between the ARCA Menards Series car that you're racing and the Xfinity Series car that you're racing. But talk about the competition level. What do you notice about the competition level? Is it about the same, or do you notice any differences there?
No, I mean, you know, at the front of ARCA, I would say it gets quite competitive, but, you know, as you get out of the top 10, you definitely start to lose some competitive cars. And, you know, the Xfinity Series, you could get to 25th or 30th, and you're still at that same level you are in the front of ARCA, maybe the top three or so. You know, the depth of the series is obviously very competitive, and, you know, I think this year more than ever, it's one of the strongest, might be the strongest series in NASCAR right now. So obviously I learned that the hard way at Phoenix, finishing 26th and, you know, driving my tail off. But, it helps me as a driver. You know, I don't want anything given to me on the track. You know, I don't care to be handed a top 10 or a win. You know, I want to go earn it, and I feel like the Xfinity Series offers that to me at least.
Yeah, I think they do too. And I think it's great experience for you as you're pursuing your career and working through the NASCAR ladder, if you will. Nick, Rev Racing, I'm assuming that they're going to be doing a combine this year?
I'm not totally sure yet. They haven't really announced his plans to me or really ever anyone, I believe. Yeah, hopefully we'll learn more about that in the future.
Okay, and you've been through a few combines, and are you going to be involved with the one this year?
Yeah, you know,
maybe as a mentor.
No matter how far I get in my career, you know, I'll always be a part of the Rev Racing family. You know, I'll always help them any way I can. So, obviously in the future, I'll definitely be involved and be a part of it.
Okay. Well, Nick, I'm so happy for your victory at Talladega Super Speedway. I'm really looking forward to the race that's coming up at Talladega. Do you have any other races at Kansas? Do you have any other races coming up in between? Are you racing in the east or the west?
Nope. Really just the main ARCA series in Xfinity. Really – east or west, as of now, at least I'm not competing in any of those.
Okay. This is a chance for you to give any shout-outs that you want to give before we say goodbye. And also, I want to make sure that we let fans know how they can follow you on social media and keep up with what's going on with Nick Sanchez.
Yeah, of course. Everyone can follow me at Nick Sanchez 080. All my social channels, that's the name.
Okay. And then, of course, Rev Racing keeps up with everything that he's doing as well. So, again, Nick, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show tonight and sharing your thoughts and emotions about that win at Talladega Super Speedway. It's always fun to kind of share that afterward and look forward to that next race at Kansas where you know you've won before. So thanks for your time here tonight, and we'll look forward somewhere down the road. I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk to you again.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me, and have a great night.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. All right, that is Nick Sanchez, the winner from Talladega Super Speedway in the ARCA Menards Series. He's also a part-time driver for BJ McLeod Motorsports in the Xfinity Series, and you'll see him back on track in the Xfinity Series at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So, Jay, your thoughts about our interview with Nick Sanchez?
Look forward to seeing how he does there at Charlotte, a mile and a half track. The experience he is getting and what he has done, kind of been the lead driver for many years. You mentioned having gone through the combines and everything for Rev Racing. And you talked about that, if he's still there to help mentor then the next group if they have the combine again. But he is one that I see, you know, we've seen some drivers come out as, I guess, the next hottest thing. Nick Sanchez, I see as that capability. He just hasn't necessarily been knocking down wins and championships, very solid and progressing. And I really look forward to seeing him go into the Xfinity Series and what he does there and the opportunities he gets based off those results. Because like I said, I see a very solid, top-notch driver there.
Yeah, you might not see it in previous years, but I think there's a chance we might see it this year in the ARCA Menards Series. I know his teammate, Rajah Caruth, is at the top of the series point standings right now. But Nick Sanchez has some strength in his corner with that victory, and we'll see how that momentum carries him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We've seen this in the past with Venturini Motorsports as well as others. The teammate battles, they can be a lot of fun to watch. And I know those two drivers have a lot of fun together, so it'll be a great great series there to watch that points battle.
Excuse me, I had to cough there. And I just got a tickle in my throat. I'm going to have you give the Camping World truck series details, and then I'll start at the bottom.
I'm sorry, say that again. I couldn't understand you. Oh, the truck. Okay, the truck series. Camping World truck series. Yep. NASCAR Camping World truck series. The next race will be the Dead On Tools 200. It'll take place at Darlington Raceway. A couple of weeks yet, coming up on May 6th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Total purse going to be $1,275,583. TV coverage will be on FS1 starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then radio coverage will be MRN, Sirius XM radio. The distance will be 200 miles, 147 laps. Stage 1 will end on lap 45, 2 on lap 90. And then the final shootout will be another 57 laps to end on lap 147. So we got a little bit of news here in the truck series. They're not racing for another week, but we like to keep you up to date here on what we got going. Scroll down to where the truck series notes are now.
Okay, there are four Camping World Truck Series drivers competing this weekend at Dover. And they will be competing either in the Cup Series or the Xfinity Series races. So even though the truck series is not racing, some of the drivers will be behind the wheel at Dover. Kyle Busch Motorsports driver John Hunter Nemechek and Chandler Smith will be in the Xfinity Series race this weekend at Dover. Nemechek is competing in the 18 for Joe Gibbs Racing and their Toyota. He has crew chief Jason Ratcliffe on top of the box. Nemechek made three Xfinity Series starts this season, posting two top fives, and he's also made five Xfinity Series starts at Dover, posting three top ten finishes. Now, Nemechek's KBM teammate, Chandler Smith, is piloting the number 26 for Sam Hunt Racing in the Toyota this weekend in the Xfinity Series at Dover. Smith made his Xfinity career debut last weekend at Talladega, and this weekend will be his Xfinity Series track debut at Dover. Young Motorsports' Kaz Grala is driving the 48 Big Machine Racing Chevrolet in the Xfinity Series, and Grala's made four starts in the series this season, posting an average finish of 27.5. He also has two Dover Xfinity Series starts, posting an average finish of 25.5. On Sunday, David Gilliland's racing Ryan Preece is back in the NASCAR Cup Series, driving the number 15 for Rick Ware Racing in their Ford with crew chief Kevin Ribello. I don't know if I pronounced that right or not. Priest has made his season debut in the Cup Series at Richmond Raceway. He posted a top 10 finish, and he's made five Cup Series starts at Dover, posting an average finish of 23.2. So we're looking forward to seeing those Cup Series drivers race this weekend at Dover.
Well, I'll go ahead and move on to Darlington. We'll practice and work on that crew chief name there, because I wouldn't have done any better with the chair.
Thank you.
Now, the road to get to Darlington is all roads as he leads to Darlington. And we look ahead to next weekend's Dead On Tools 200, mentioned May 6th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 MRN Sirius XM Radio at Darlington Raceway. We got current NASCAR Camping World Truck Series driver standing leader and the defending series champion and Thor Sport driver Ben Rhodes is the only active winner driver entered in the race. Rhodes is also the most recent winner in the series, having taken the checkered flag at Bristol Motor Speedway on dirt. In six starts this season, Rhodes has put up the one win there at Bristol and five top fives. Rhodes will be looking to add another win to his stat sheet at Darlington this next weekend. The Kentucky native has made three starts at the 1.366-mile track, posting a one win, which came in 2019, two top fives, and two top tens.
Okay, we're six races in, and seven spots are still open in the Truck Series playoffs. With six races in the books and seven spots still up for grabs, the Truck Series playoffs for the Stamping World Truck Series playoffs after the Bristol Dirt Race. Locked in are three drivers this season on the virtue of a win. Zane Smith has two wins. Ben Rhodes and Chandler Smith each have one win. Those that are in on points include four drivers have built up a points cushion of 25 points or more over the playoff cut line following Bristol. That includes Stuart Friesen, who's plus 60 points from the cutoff, John Hunter Nemechek, plus 49, Christian Eckes, plus 39, just 1 point difference there. Tyma Jeske is 33 points to the advantage, and Tanner Gray is plus 25 points. Now, Nice Motorsports' Carson Hocevar is ranked ninth in the Camping World Truck Series playoff outlook. He's 16 points up on the postseason cutoff. Right behind Hocevar, though, is ThorSport Racing's two-time series champion, Matt Crafton. He's just 9 points ahead of GMS Racing's Grant Infinger in 11th, the first spot outside of that playoff cutoff. Now, on the outside looking in, nine different drivers outside the top 10 in the postseason outlook are still eligible to race their way into the playoffs by the end of the regular season. GMS Racing's Grant Infinger right now is 11th in the playoff outlook. He's 9 points back from Matt Crafton in 10th, and he's got the final playoff transfer spot. Now, following Infinger is Jack Krause, minus 23 points back from the cutoff. Then is Tyler Ankrum. He's 25 points back. Matt DiBenedetto, there's a little bit of a break here. He's Timmy Hill, 57 points back. Austin Wayne Self, minus 62. Kate Fogelman, minus 74. And Chris Wright, minus 76. Now, keep in mind, the driver must be ranked in the top 20 in points to be eligible to earn a way into the playoffs. So those drivers have to keep themselves in that top 20 to remain eligible.
That's right. It's never too early to start watching that. I know one of our hot topics has kind of revolved around that. But looking at the five different Camping World Truck Series winners in the last five races, since the second race of the season, the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series has rallied off five different winners, and when the series returns to action at Darlington Raceway for the Dead On Tools 200, could very well see a sixth. Mentioned ThorSports Racing's Ben Rhode, the only active driver entered at Darlington Raceway with a Camping World Truck Series win at the 1.366-mile egg-shaped track coming in 2019. The last two Truck Series races at Darlington, though, have been won by Sheldon Creed, who moved full-time into the Xfinity Series this season with Richard Childress Racing. Now, three drivers are tied for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series best average finish among active drivers at Darlington Raceway with a 5.0, and all three are looking for their win of the season. That includes Grant Enfinger, John Hunter Nemechek, and Christian Eckes. That'll be interesting there. We got John Hunter Nemechek. We haven't seen him as strong as we did last year, at least to start the season. Ben Rhodes still off on a hot start. So I think the Truck Series is going to be real interesting coming down the stretch.
I think so, too. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you notice the purse is a lot bigger this week than we've seen in a while. So there's a lot of money on the line for that Darlington race. Now, a couple things I want to also mention here. If you over at Jaskies, they have the Advanced Auto Parts Advanced My Track Challenge, and you can vote now for your favorite local track. For me, it's got to be Rockford Speedway here in Illinois. But there's all kinds of tracks you can vote for, and this is your chance to identify what's the favorite local track in the Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series. So, and it's calling attention to that weekly series as well, and that's all under NASCAR's umbrella.
Well, I'd say you're showing a little favoritism, but that's what it is. It is picking your favorite. So most certainly, most people obviously going to pick one in their home state or area. But there's some that throughout the country, though, that certainly rank up there. I'll have to take a look at it. I hadn't looked at that list yet, but take a look at that. Be interesting to see and get some great exposure for your hometown track.
Absolutely. There's also a couple of other notes there, Jay. I'll talk about Danny Bonn, and then you can maybe mention Armani Williams. Danny Bonn is bringing awareness to Lyme's disease at Darlington Raceway, and there's a picture of his car. I'm having a hard time talking tonight. Xfinity Series. He's driving the number 11 Mountain Dew car, and a great article there from Young's Motorsports about Danny Bonn bringing awareness to Lyme disease. And the month of May is recognized as Lyme Disease Awareness Month. So they're certainly embracing that with this awareness campaign.
Well, for me, there's no better way to bring awareness than through Mountain Dew, I'll tell you that. But Armani Williams, he's going to be returning the Ryum Brothers Racing in 2022 for multiple races. Quick run through again this article on jayski.com. I know he'll be beginning at Texas Motor Speedway next week. Now, he was impressive at his World Series debut at Worldwide Technology Raceway at Gateway last August, where he finished a respectable 21st. After earning his speedway license for NASCAR competition. So looking through here, I don't see if it says what his other races are. Again, the first one will be Texas Motor Speedway, but it will be multiple races. Oh, here we go. Williams will close out the 2022 Camping World Truck Series season at Phoenix Raceway on November 4th with local support from Visit Mesa, which is Arizona, with the Lucas Oil 150. So keep an eye out for the races we get to see him in. And just to let you know, he's 20 and graduated to the Truck Series here after stints in the Premier ARCA Menards Series and both the ARCA Menards East and West, as well as the Canadian-based NASCAR's Pinty Series.
Okay. That race for Danny Bonn, I think I inadvertently said Xfinity Series. It actually is the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series at Darlington Raceway. It's on May the 6th, so definitely looking forward to seeing him behind the wheel.
Oh,
anything else that we want to mention here in the truck series? We've kind of covered.
No, I know. Yeah, and we'll get to a full preview of that. Again, they're off for one more weekend before they hit Darlington, so next Thursday night. We'll look forward to doing that, along with the throwback weekend.
Yeah, I think we've already mentioned Spencer Boyd running the Michael Waltrip throwback truck with Ryan Rim Time at Darlington, and Matt DiBenedetto with Rackley War team to honor Sterling Marlin in the Darlington Raceway throwback weekend. So Haley Deacon has a nod to Bobby Allison. So, again, there's quite a few drivers preparing their throwback cars for that Darlington race weekend.
Yeah, this is always one of my favorite times of year. You can find them on, I think, NASCAR.com. Jayski does a good job of keeping them updated. But you got to take a look at some of these paint schemes. There's not a whole lot we can do over the radio to tell you about them, other than tell you who it is a throwback to. You got to go back and look at them, and they really do bring back some nostalgia feelings in history. I really like it. Again, whoever came up with that idea for the throwback weekend at Darlington, absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series. They are racing this weekend. The A-Game 200 at Dover Motor Speedway is Saturday, April 30th. Starts at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time with a purse of $1,419,713. Your pre-race coverage will be on Fox Sports 1 starting at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. The distance is 200 miles over 200 laps. Stage 1 and 2 are 45 laps apiece. Stage 1 ending on lap 45, stage 2 on lap 90. And the final lap is 110 laps ending on lap 200. What do we have for the Xfinity Series here, Jay?
I'm going to give my best Jerry Maguire impression and say, show me the money. We got a winner, winner, Allmendinger. Dover is the final, is to host the final round of the Dash for Cash. Now, another driver looking for that three-peat this weekend at Dover Motor Speedway, and that be veteran driver A.J. Allmendinger. He took home the Dash for Cash $100,000 prize for the second time this season. He picked it up at Martinsville as well as Talladega. Now, prior to Allmendinger winning two Dash for Cash rounds this year, only eight drivers had won multiple rounds in a single season. Reed Sorensen did it in 2011. At Daytona in Iowa, Elliott Sadler in 2013 at Daytona in Chicago, Regan Smith and Dover in Indianapolis in 2015. 2016, it was Eric Jones, Bristol in Dover. Justin Allgaier did it the next year in 17 at Phoenix in Richmond. And Bell came along in 19, did it at Bristol in Dover. Chastain did it in 2000, Ross Chastain, in Atlanta and Pocono. And last year it was Noah Gregson, and he's got three, as he did Martinsville, Talladega, and Darlington. AJ, could we repeat that actually exactly so? If Allmendinger wins this fourth and final Dash for Cash round of the 2022 season, again, he'll join Gregson as one of only two drivers to win the three of the four rounds, banking $300,000 in bonuses, coincidentally right at the same tracks. Now, this weekend, Allmendinger will battle it out on the Monster Mile with Noah Gregson, Landon Castle, and Ryan Sieg. Great to see those two names in there. That's the final Dash for Cash opportunity of the 2022 season. Now, of the four drivers vying for that Dash for Cash this weekend at Dover, Gregson has the best average finish at the track with a 9 point, followed by Allmendinger, who's at 12.5, Sieg's at 14.6, Landon Castle with a 21.2, but he's with Colleg Racing this year, so keep your eye on him.
Okay, and we should note that there are some Cup Series regulars planning to make a few Xfinity Series appearances, including Junior Motorsports, who will be fielding a fifth car, the number 88 Chevrolet Camaro, in five additional Xfinity Series races this season. Behind the wheel will be Chase Elliott at Darlington Raceway on May 7th, William Byron at Texas Motor Speedway on May 21st, and New Hampshire Motor Speedway on July 16th. Then Kyle Larson will be behind the wheel at Watkins Glen International on August the 20th and Darlington Raceway on September the 3rd. So you skipped that one, Jay.
I see that now, but I do have it up on the Hot Topics list. I guess that's where I had seen it. I hadn't noticed it in the notes here, so I apologize for that. But we'll hit that again in Hot Topics coming up here in about a half hour. Moving on to the Monster Mile, Justin Allgaier has conquered that monster before. We only got one active NASCAR Xfinity Series driver this weekend that can tout the fact that they have conquered that Monster Mile, and that belongs to Junior Motorsports driver Justin Allgaier. The Illinois native grabbed the wins at the 1 mile concrete track in 2018 as well as 2020. Allgaier has undoubtedly perfected his strategy for the 1 mile track at Dover Motor Speedway. Make sure I say that right, currently riding an 8-race streak of top 10 finishes. And what's more impressive is that he has finished third or better in seven of those eight top tens. Now, it should also shouldn't shock you that he's also done well on the other one-mile track, such as Phoenix. In 24 starts at Phoenix Raceway, he's posted two wins, eight top fives, and 16 top tens. Now, Allgaier has had a strong start to the 2022 season, posting a top 10 finishes through the first four races, but has since struggled to keep up the momentum. Perhaps Dover Motor Speedway will be a turning point for him to get back on track. In total, Allgaier has made 21 starts at Dover, posting two wins, 10 top fives, and 14 top tens.
Well, another driver that keeps finding victory lane is Noah Gregson. He held off a very hard-charging Jeffrey Earnhardt in the famous number 3 RCR Chevrolet at Talladega Super Speedway. Junior motorsports driver Noah Gregson took the checkered flag and became the second Xfinity Series driver this season with multiple wins, winning at both Phoenix and Talladega, making 2022 his third consecutive season with multiple victories. Now, back in the number 9 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet this weekend at Dover, Gregson is making his way to victory lane for the third time in just 10 races this season. he's hoping to make his way to victory lane for the third time this season in just 10 races. That would tie Ty Gibbs for the season's most wins so far. Still hear me, Jay?
Yeah, you faded away and are real weak now. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me better now?
There you go. Yep, you're good.
Okay. Now, Gregson has done well at one-mile tracks and has the wins to show for it. His first win this season was at Phoenix, a track where he's posted a top 15 finish in all but one race since 2019, and the same can be said about his stints at Dover Motor Speedway. His only finish outside the top 15 at the Monster Mile was in 2019 spring race when he placed 19th. Now, Gregson might be hot right now, but the 19-year-old Ty Gibbs isn't going to make it easy for Gregson this weekend. Like Gregson, Gibbs also has a good track record at one-mile tracks, and although he doesn't have too much history to look back on, as his last year was his rookie season, he posted a fifth-place finish last year at Dover and had a runner-up finish at Phoenix. Okay, hold on. I lost my spot here. This season, his run at the one-mile tracks resulted in a top 10 finish, and Gibbs has posted three wins, three top fives, and five top tens in the first nine races of the season. And after a crash at Talladega that left him near the back of the pack, he's likely to come into this weekend's race at Dover fierce and focused. Now, to add even more fuel to the fire between these two competitors, they are within just 5 points of each other in the Xfinity Series driver standings. Although both are already locked into the playoffs with their respective wins, Gregson's 344 points has a slight edge over Gibbs at 339 points. So that's quite a competition shaping up there between those two drivers.
It certainly is, and I can't wait to see that play out on the track. When we look at Dover's Monster Mile for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, they're going to need to bring their A game for the A Game 200 at Dover Motor Speedway. It'll be Saturday, April 30th, for the 10th race of the 2022 season. Five drivers have secured their spots in the NASCAR Xfinity Series playoffs this season, leaving seven positions still open. Now, last year at the Monster Mile, it was Team Penske's Austin Cindric who worked his way up from the 16th starting position to win for the third time in the 2021 season. Cindric went on to win two more times that year. There have been 75 NASCAR Xfinity Series races at Darlington or at Dover Motor Speedway, with 48 different pole winners, 51 different race winners. 8 races have been won from the pole at Dover in the Xfinity Series, most recently by Kyle Larson back in 2017. Now, Kyle Busch has the most wins at the track. What do we got? 5, 6, 2008, 2010 sweep, and a 2014 sweep, so 5. Has posted the most top 10s at 15 and has led the most laps at the Monster Mile for a total of 1,349. And Joey Logano holds the race record at 131.219 miles per hour, comeback in 2013. And Eric Jones holds the qualifying record from 2016 at 158.318 miles per hour. And this weekend, 2 former Xfinity Series Dover pole winners are entered into the A-Game 200. Daniel Hemric did it in October of 18, and Brandon Jones in May of 18. And we mentioned just the one former Xfinity Series Dover winner entered this weekend is Justin Allgaier with his 2 wins there in 2018 and 2020. Now, on-track activity for the Xfinity Series will get started on Friday the 29th. We do have practice scheduled from 3 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, and that'll be directly followed by qualifying at 3:30 Eastern.
Okay. Now, the race, Xfinity Series race at Dover Motor Speedway is going to be the 200th NASCAR event at the Monster Mile. So the race on Saturday will go down in the record books as the 200th NASCAR National Series race held in the state of Delaware, all of which have been at the Monster Mile Dover Motor Speedway. They have 103 Cup races there, 75 Xfinity races, and 21 Truck Series races. That's a total of 199. The first race was in 1969. At Dover Motor Speedway, and that was the NASCAR Cup Series race held on July the 6th. The race was won by Hall of Famer Richard Petty, driving a Ford for Petty Enterprises. The first Xfinity Series race was on May 5th of 82 at Dover, and the event was won by Joe Ruttman, driving a Pontiac for car owner Butch Mock. The first Truck Series race at Dover was held on September 22nd of 2000, and the race was won by Kurt Busch, driving a Ford for Jack Roush. The 50th NASCAR National Series race at Dover was on June 4th of 89, a NASCAR Cup Series race that was won by NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Earnhardt. The 100th NASCAR National Series race at Dover was on June 3rd, 2001, again, the NASCAR Cup Series race that was won by NASCAR Hall of Famer Jeff Gordon. The 150th National Series race at Dover was May 15th of 2011. Again, it was a NASCAR Cup Series race that was won by Matt Kenseth. So a big milestone there for Dover Motor Speedway this weekend. Also coming up this weekend is the NASCAR Cup Series race, many, it'll be the 201st race at Dover. The Duramax Driving 400 presented by Railadyne. That will take place on Sunday, May the 1st at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. The purse, $7,205,203. It'll be televised at Fox Sports 1. Their pre-race coverage starts at 2 p.m. Eastern. And radio coverage is available at MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, they will be racing a distance of 400 miles over 400 laps. The first stage ends on lap 120. The second stage ends on lap 250. And the final stage ends on lap 400. Again, a lot to look forward to in this Cup Series race. What do we have there? Grammy-nominated and CMA New Artist of the Year is going to perform there.
Let me scroll up there. Okay. Yeah, Grammy-nominated CMA New Artist of the Year is Jimmy Allen. He'll perform the pre-race concert. As a Delaware native and multi-platinum-selling, award-winning country music superstar Jimmy Allen to perform the pre-race concert at the Monster Mile before the Duramax Dryden 400 presented by Reladyne NASCAR Cup Series race on Sunday, May the 1st. It'll be at the Embrace Home Loan stage in Victory Plaza. Now, Allen is a Milton, Delaware native, most recently nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammy Awards in April and co-hosted the ACM Awards with Dolly Parton in March. Other 2022 nominations for Allen have included the ACM Male Artist of the Year, standing New Artist at the NAACP Image Awards. He's the reigning CMA New Artist of the Year, and also won the ACM New Male Artist of the Year in 2021. His third album, The Tulip Drive, will be released on June 24th, and Records' lead single, Down Home, is available everywhere now.
Okay, let's reminisce about Hendrick Motorsports' 1-2-3-4 finish last season. Now, last season, Hendrick Motorsports flexed its competitive muscles, becoming the third team all time in Cup Series history to finish a race with all four of its cars in the top four spots. Joining Peter DiPaolo Racing on December 30th of 1956 at Titusville, April 7th, 1957 at North Wilkesboro, and RFK Racing, who did it on November 20th, 2005 at Homestead, Miami. Alex Bowman led Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, and William Byron to a 1-3-4 finish at Hendrick Motorsports at Dover Motor Speedway just last season. Now, going from the bottom up, we'll look at some face-offs between some drivers to watch for this weekend. You want to start with Chase Elliott and Tyler Reddick?
Yeah, I love these matchups when you get to thinking about them. We got the number 9, Chase Elliott, versus the number 8 of Tyler Reddick. Now, Reddick has been a magnet for heartbreak, unfortunately, over the past couple of weeks. He got taken out while battling for the lead on the final lap 2 weeks ago at Bristol, and then followed that up with a part failure at Talladega that took him out of contention in the opening stage of the race. And with how much speed Reddick has shown this season, seems likely he'll regain his footing this weekend at Dover. But can he outgun Chase Elliott head-to-head? Now, Elliott was stellar in this race last year, obviously, posting a third-place finish, and has a win in 2018 at the facility to his credit. Now, this matchup will be a fascinating battle between the driver who has been consistently solid all year long in Chase Elliott versus that inconsistent driver who has at times had appeared to have top dominant speed in Tyler Reddick.
Okay, next up, we have Kevin Harvick in the number 4 versus the number 19 of Martin Truex Jr. Now, both of these drivers are looking for their first win this season. Harvick started the season slow, but he's come alive recently. Truex, on the other hand, has been as close as anyone to a win this year, but has found some troubles and bad luck late in races. So these two veterans host two of the best drivers. These veterans hoist two of the best driver averages at Dover and will certainly be looking forward to this track in hopes to get a much-needed win this season.
And the next matchup we got, we talked about this earlier, it's between teammates. Alex Bowman in the number 48 and number 24, William Byron, both driving for HMS. Now, before last year, most people thought that Alex Bowman was the clear fourth best driver at Hendrick Motorsports. But a lot of narrative has changed over the past 24 months. Both drivers are as consistent as they come and are always in the mix in late in the races, no matter what the track. Now, Byron does have 2 wins to Bowman's 1 this year, but Bowman may have the edge at Dover. Bowman returns to defend his win, while Byron owns 2 top 5s and looks to break through here at the Monster Mile.
Okay, our last matchup here is the number one of Ross Chastain versus the number five of Kyle Larson. Chastain's dream season continued last Sunday at Talladega as he collected his second win of the year after a tight battle for the win on the final lap against Kyle Larson and Eric Jones. Now, Chastain has shown speed in nearly every race this season, but can he topple Larson for a second week in a row on one of Larson's best tracks statistically? That will be the question heading into our headline matchup of the week. So we'll see what happens. It's over on Sunday.
Well, moving up with Bell and Reddick, actually teeter on the playoff cut line heading into Dover. And to scant 1 point that separates the Joe Gibbs Racing driver, Christopher Bell, who's in 16th in that final NASCAR Cup Series playoff position, from Richard Childress Racing's Tyler Reddick in 17th, which is the first spot outside the postseason cut as they head to Dover Motor Speedway for the Duramax Dryden 400 presented by Reladyne. Again, Sunday, May 1st. Now, both Bell and Reddick earned spots in last season's NASCAR Cup Series at playoffs for the first time in their careers and intend to do the same this year as well. Now, Bell's made 3 Cup Series starts at the Monster Mile, posting an average finish of 23.3. The young Oklahoman has also back-to-back wins at the 366 mile track coming in the Xfinity Series from 2018 to 2019. So those are on his resume. Now, Reddick has made 3 Cup Series starts at Dover where he's posted 1 top 10 finish, average finish right there close to it at 13.0.
Okay. Defending the series points leader, Chase Elliott, is still winless after 10 races into the 2022 season. It's so hard to believe that he doesn't have a win yet. Atop the Cup Series point standings this season following Talladega is Hendrick Motorsports driver Chase Elliott. He's holding a 21-point lead over second-place Ryan Blaney as the series heads to Dover Motor Speedway for the Duramax Dryden 400. Elliott returns to the Monster Mile looking for his first win this season, riding a winless streak that dates back to Road America on July 4th of 2021 and just 26 races ago. That's so hard to believe, but his consistency keeps him at the top of the points. Taming the concrete mile of Dover has come naturally for Elliott, though. He has 11 series starts at the Monster Mile and has collected 1 win in 2018. 8 top 5 finishes, including a third-place result just last season. So he'll be one to watch this weekend.
Always one to watch. So now we got to look at 3 teams, though, over the last 17 Cup races that have dominated Dover, and that spans from 2013 to 2021. In those last 17 NASCAR Cup Series races at Dover Motor Speedway, only 3 teams have visited victory lane: Hendrick Motorsports, who has 8 wins during that time, Joe Gibbs Racing with 5 wins, and Stuart Haas Racing with 4 wins. And the most recent win at Dover Motorsports was Hendrick Motorsports when Alex Bowman drove to the win last season. It was the organization's NASCAR Cup Series leading 21st victory at Dover among 7 different drivers. Jimmy Johnson holds a good chunk of that with 11 wins. Jeff Gordon has 5. Jeff Bodine has 1. Ken Schrader 1. Ricky Rudd 1. Chase Elliott 1. And now Alex Bowman with 1. 8 of those 21 wins have come in the last 17 races, which is 47%, in nearly half of the events spanning from 13 to 21. Not far behind HMS when wins there at Dover is Joe Gibbs Racing, who has a total of 9 NASCAR Cup Series Dover victories, 5 of them coming in those last 17 events at the 1 mile facility. The most recent Joe Gibbs Racing driver to win was Denny Hamlin, and that was in 2020. the third organization to jump in on the wins at Dover Motor Speedway in that time period is Stuart Haas Racing, with four victories amongst two drivers, Tony Stewart, picked on up in 2013, and Kevin Harvick has ones in 2015, 18, and 2020. Now, this season, five different organizations have won at least one race in the NASCAR Cup Series. It's led by Hendrick Motorsports, who has four victories. Then we got Trackhouse Racing with two victories, Joe Gibbs Racing also with two, Team Penske has one, and Stuart Haas Racing has one. So we love the parity. We're seeing that play out with this next-gen car.
We certainly are, and I love it. Okay, now the NASCAR Cup Series dives into the Monster Mile at Dover Motor Speedway with the Duramax Driving 400 presented by Relodyne on Sunday. Aptly nicknamed the Monster Mile, Dover Motor Speedway is a one-mile concrete paved oval located in Dover, Delaware. It's also known as Dover. It was also known as Dover Downs International Speedway, and they've hosted 103 Cup Series races dating back to the inaugural event, as we mentioned earlier, on July 6, 1969. The first Dover Cup Series race was run by NASCAR Hall of Famer Richard Petty. We mentioned that earlier. He drove at 115.772 miles per hour, and the race was 2 hours and 35 minutes and 28 seconds. Petty actually won the first two Cup Series events at the track in 69 and again in 1970. In total, 103 Cup Series races at Dover have produced 42 different pole winners and 39 different race winners. NASCAR Hall of Famer David Pearson leads the series in poles with six. He had his, in 69, a 73 sweep, 74, 75, and in 81. Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin leads all active series drivers in poles at Dover with four, 2012, 13, 15, and 19. Seven of the 42 Cup Series Dover pole winners are active this weekend. They include Denny Hamlin, who has the four poles we mentioned. Martin Truex Jr. has three in 17, 11, and 10. Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, and Kevin Harvick all have one from 2014 through 2019. Recently retired driver Jimmy Johnson holds the NASCAR Cup Series record for the most wins at Dover. He has 11 victories, including a 2002 sweep, 2005 playoff win, 2009 sweep, 2010 playoffs, the spring of 2012, 2013 playoffs, the spring of 2014, and the spring of 2015, along with the spring of 2017. Three drivers are tied for the most wins among active competitors at Dover, including Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr., and Kyle Busch. Each of them have three wins. Of the 39 different Cup Series winners at Dover, nine are active this weekend. It includes Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr., and Kyle Busch with those three victories each. And then, dating from 2011 to 2021, are drivers with one win, including Alex Bowman, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Brad Keselowski, and Kurt Busch. This weekend's Duramax 400, Duramax Stridine 400, again, is 400 laps broken up into the three stages, and all the on-track action begins for the Cup Series on Saturday, April 30th, with practice from 10:30 a.m. to 11:15 a.m., directly followed by the Busch Light qualifying at 11:15 a.m., and both practice and qualifying will be televised on Fox Sports 1, as will the race at 2 p.m. with the pre-race coverage on Fox Sports 1. So, Jay, we are at the top of the hour, and that means it's time for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. So, what is our first hot topic for tonight? Jay, are you still there?
Nope. Sorry, I got to come off mute there as I was trying to pull up our list. Couldn't find the one I wanted to pull up, but let's see. I know we put a lot of them up today. I guess I hate to start with this one, but we'll go ahead and get it out of the way. Daniel Dye was recently charged with, assault? No, felony battery, and has been suspended by ARCA Menard Series. There's a lot of information out there on it, so you fans want to check it out, but I guess he punched somebody in the groin area, and it caused some serious medical problems, and he has been charged with a felony battery and, like I said, suspended by ARCA Menard Series.
Yeah, it started as a prank, a teenage prank in the classroom, but resulted in felony charges for Daniel Dye. This is going to be interesting to follow. I hate to hear this. It's not something that we want to hear about our ARCA or NASCAR series drivers. I know he races for GMS Racing as well in the truck series. Right now, they're kind of waiting to see what happens with this. They've not really made a whole lot of statements yet. But he has been suspended indefinitely in the ARCA Menard Series. Again, just a disappointing situation. I hate to see it for somebody who is so young. To have to have this on his record is kind of a shame. Let me see if there's any other. I think I'm the only one who made a comment there. Nobody else really made any comments. But, Jay, I'm curious to know your thoughts about it. It's just sad to see this happen.
It is. And in the position he's in and currently second in the ARCA Menard Series point standings, going to be an unfortunate situation if he misses a race. Now, no matter where he is in points, that shouldn't be relevant to what happened. If there's an issue off the track, okay, I understand that. What I don't particularly like is that this time he has been charged, obviously, but not convicted. And I believe it was his lawyer who said that, you know, he'd be exonerated when all the facts came out. I understand the sanctioning body's position, wanting to be aware of it and take action. But until it all comes out, I don't know that they should be suspending him. Now, with that of, you mentioned it as a kid's, he mentioned he's 18. It was with another high school friend horsing around or however it came about what they were doing. And an unfortunate situation happened with this. You know, I don't see it as a vicious crime, okay? Now, letter of the law, that's what they've charged him with, is felony battery. I think that plays into a huge factor, and I'm hoping that as the situation, more details come out, all this information will come out. Understand, again, you know, accidental or not, there are going to be repercussions from it, but that he'll be able to recover from it and go through any kind of training program. Because like I said, I don't view it as a vicious can't think of the other word I was looking for, but thought out intended action that he attacked somebody. So hopefully that comes into consideration. And like I said, that he'll be able to work with the sanctioning body.
Yes. And per Popocris on Twitter, Dye's attorney, Aaron Delgado, said, once all the facts do come to light, and you mentioned this, Jay, Mr. Dye is going to be completely exonerated. It appears that this was people playing a game at the school and nothing more than that. The school is not taking any action, and we don't think police involvement was warranted. So we have to follow this and see how this plays out. Unfortunately, from what we've seen, it appears that the other boy was sustained an injury that could be a lifelong injury that will affect him. And that's where this suit is coming from and why there was a charge filed against him. So I kind of see both sides of the story there. I'm sure once the parents got involved, they weren't going to let it just slide by. They wanted to take some action. So if it's your son, you would certainly feel the same way. But we'll have to see how the legality of the situation plays out. But it's just unfortunate for both boys that this did play out. One is going to have something that follows him for the rest of, well, they'll both have this follow them for the rest of their lives. So I hope it works out. I don't know. I just hope that these guys can get past this, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
You mentioned it, okay, they were both involved in, you know, we'll call it horseplay. Again, I don't know the exact details of what they were doing, but in an unfortunate situation developed and happened, obviously feel bad for them. But I think of it as if you happen to have, I unfortunately had this with a cousin of mine, if you're cleaning the gun or whatever, yeah, you're supposed to make sure it's not loaded, whatever, and shot his sister. Okay, that is not murder, attempted murder. Okay, it was an accident. So that's where I think the difference is, and I don't like the fact that, unfortunately, it's being charged with the felony battery. I don't see that as a vicious attack then versus an accidental. Yes, it still happened, and there may still be repercussions from it, but I don't think it should be the same level of if it is done with intent or malicious intent. That was the word I was looking for earlier, as a violent thing. So, like I said, hopefully, right now the Arkham and Ard series isn't racing this weekend. Hopefully some of this will be settled before their next race to prevent him from being suspended. Now, I don't want to say that just because he's in the Arkham and Ard series or he's second in points or anything, he should be exempt from any punishment, because if it is that he did it and it was with intent or whatever, then by all means, I do feel that a suspension is warranted. I just don't know that we have that yet. So we'll have to see, like you said, how all the information comes out and what gets settled out of it.
Yeah, it's really hard to do this. I get that. But I do think that we need to kind of withhold any judgment on this situation until all of the facts are clear and let the legal process take its due course. Okay, Jay, what's our next hot topic?
Well, the other one, and I'm going to have to wait on that one. I know we kind of talked about it, Kyle Busch and Joe Gibbs. And I was looking for, I just had an article, but Toyota has apparently backed Kyle Busch, which is kind of pointing the finger at Joe Gibbs as to why the deal's not done. And I know Kyle kind of made reference to this in his interview when asked about it. You know, he said, go ask Joe Gibbs. Do you think there's something there, or is it just that Joe Gibbs obviously wants to have sponsorship deal tied up before he commits to the driver, or do you think there's a change coming?
Okay, I don't know where you're getting that from. I didn't see that earlier, so I'm trying to find it.
Like I said, it was... I don't know. I got it off of Google. But apparently Toyota came out and kind of vouched for Kyle Busch, saying that they want him in Toyota along with it, Joe Gibbs. Editorial. This is this person's opinion then that points the finger to Joe Gibbs as to why it's not being
done. Did you post it on our Hot Topics, Jay?
No, I was trying to, during the show, and I lost the link and now I can't find the article back. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't read anything on this, so I'm kind of speaking from the cuff, if you will. But it makes you wonder if maybe there isn't some bad blood there between Kyle Busch and Joe Gibbs Racing. I do know that they are probably looking for a spot for Ty Gibbs move up into the Cup Series. I hope they show some restraint with that. I think it would do Ty Gibbs some good to stay in the Xfinity Series another year. We'll have to see how this season continues to play out. I hope they don't push him up to the Cup Series too soon, but I think that might be part of where there's some bad blood. I know there was some mention that Denny Hamlin, this was something a few weeks ago, there was some talk that maybe Denny Hamlin was considering retirement after this year, too. So that would certainly open up a spot as well. But, again, I kind of feel like I'm talking off the cuff because I don't really have any information on it. But that's something that those guys are going to have to work out between them. We can all have our opinions, but in the end, they do have to kind of work those things out. I do wish that the media would ask Joe Gibbs some questions on this, though. He says that they're working on something. He thinks that things are going to work out to keep Kyle Busch in that car. So from the comments that he's made, it doesn't sound like he's trying to hold Kyle Busch back. But as you mentioned, Kyle Busch kind of alludes to some bad blood there. So, again, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see how that plays out in the end.
Well, and the feeling I get from it that I take from the whole situation is, first, you know, Kyle would obviously like to have had it done already. As he said, he'd like to have it done yesterday. And this is my opinion. I think it has more so to do with the length or term of the contract as far as that maybe, as you said, they don't want to secure any kind of long-term. We've seen Hendrick Motorsports give Jeff Gordon a lifetime contract, you know, part mm-hmm. ownership. So I think there's some things, and Brad Keselowski just went through this. You know, I think he wanted to stay at Team Penske, but he wanted to become as involved as a ownership and leadership, and Penske didn't want to, didn't have that open spot or opportunity. So it happened. But, yeah, I think there's more to it. I mean, obviously the sponsorship deal is a key factor. You mentioned the possibility of Ty Gibbs coming up. Now, you mentioned Denny Hamlin. Whether it be retirement or not, he could possibly have the option of going to his own team with 2311. The other one that I think of was Martin Truex. As we talked about last season, he said with the next gen car, again, if it didn't mesh well with him, he may be looking at retirement rather than trying to fight through several seasons of learning the new car. Now, he hasn't been as strong as we've seen him in years past, but I don't know that anybody has, as it is a change and an adaptation. But I think he's getting his footing under him. So it'll be interesting to see. And then I think about it. We've seen Christopher Bell got the spot, and it cost Daniel Suarez, Eric Jones, you know, relatively quickly. Could we possibly see Bell be out real quick, too, that, as we have in the past?
Yeah, he could certainly be on a hot spot. But again, I really hope that they keep Ty Gibbs at the Xfinity Series level for at least one more year. I think there's some maturity there that he needs to develop before he gets up into the Cup Series. And we've seen the results of trying to push a driver, especially a talented driver, up into the Cup Series too soon. Especially when they don't have that maturity to be able to handle it. So I think Ty Gibbs falls into that category. I think it's important that he stay in the Xfinity Series. So I hope all of this to do. You bring up a good point that Kyle Busch may be looking for other concessions with his contract. That maybe Joe Gibbs isn't willing to do. It's going to be hard for him to get an ownership stake at Joe Gibbs Racing, I think. He does have his own team, Kyle Busch Motorsports. So I think he would want to take more of an active role there and maybe pursuing Kyle Busch Motorsports as more of an Xfinity Series team or even advancing eventually into the Cup Series with Kyle Busch Motorsports before he takes an ownership role at Joe Gibbs Racing. He's developed that avenue for himself already. Now, if he gets fed up with NASCAR overall, I could see him wanting to just drop out altogether and pursue other opportunities. He does have Brexton, who has his racing career that's developing, and he enjoys being a part of that. So that would open the door for him to have more involvement from that perspective as well. So again, I don't know all of the details behind it. I don't know that anybody really does know all of the details behind it. We're just getting some inferences from Kyle Busch that he's not happy, and to ask Joe Gibbs about the contract. And like I say, Joe Gibbs seems to think it's all going to work out. So we have to wait this one out and see how it plays. But I do think Kyle Busch has a lot of other options as it relates to him directly. And you're right, so does Denny Hamlin. He has a lot of other options. And Martin Truex Jr., who knows what he'll do. He likes going fishing, or maybe he'll go back to the grassroots racing when he decides to hang it up. I think a lot of these drivers that are having trouble with this new next-gen car, I think as the season gets to the halfway point, you're going to see a lot of those teams starting to excel.
Well, and you actually brought it up. Some of the things you brought up made me actually think maybe I was looking at it from the wrong end. Maybe it is that Kyle Busch wants a shorter contract, just say. Maybe Gibbs does look to want to sign him long-term, and he's saying no. Like you mentioned, maybe he wants to go to his own team and work on that or spend time with Bracton. So maybe it is he's wanting a shorter contract that Joe Gibbs is looking for a longer one, especially when it comes to going back to the sponsorship. A lot of times if they're committing, they want to match up and parallel it, driver and sponsor.
That's true.
So now, I do find it kind of interesting. As I said, Kyle Busch clearly said, ask Joe Gibbs. This article I read, and I know you said you didn't get a chance to read it because I didn't get it shared, but was the same thing of Toyota saying, hey, it's on Joe Gibbs. Now, all he has said is that that things are being worked on, and he feels it will work out. So, like you said, we don't know the exact details of where anything's at or what the direction they're going is, but it just seems like everybody's pointing the finger at Coach Gibbs. So it'll be interesting. Like I said, when we talked about this the other night, I like to think about the possibilities of Kyle Busch going somewhere else or what he were to do if he were to leave Joe Gibbs. I'm firmly behind it because, again, Kyle didn't say, hey, I don't want to drive for him. It's just not done yet. I think maybe his deal is the fact that it's not done yet, and as to why, it's on Coach Gibbs. So I still think he will end up at Coach Gibbs, Joe Gibbs Racing, at least for another three or five-year deal. I don't know what kind of deals he signed. But the possibilities of what were to happen if he weren't, that's kind of fun to imagine.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Going back to what you said about Christopher Bell, I do think he's on a little bit of a hot seat, and he needs to perform this season and maybe into next season if he's given the opportunity, because there are other drivers biting at the bit to take that seat. And that seat in particular is a hot seat, and it has been for quite a few years.
Yeah, it seems like these drivers are. I mean, especially your younger and upcoming drivers that to perform and perform now, which is why it seems like drivers like Ty Gibbs, Daniel Suarez, Christopher Bell get moved up so fast because they are winning, and so thus they want to move them up and have them at the top level. But we've seen the negative effect. And I think about going back as far as Joey Logano, Daniel Suarez. I know I mentioned his name a few weeks ago, Casey Atwood, you know, and he didn't get that chance at a second opportunity. He just up and disappeared, and that's sad.
It is sad because he was a talented guy. Okay, let's move on to the next hot topic, Jay.
All right, and I know you had this one up, and I did watch Race Hub today. They've announced the format for the All-Star Race. Will once again be at Texas Motor Speedway. A couple little different things, and let me pull that up, the whole bracket, or yeah, what's called the brackets. Okay, let's see if I can run through this relatively quickly. There'll be a four-round qualifying procedure, which will be highlighted by head-to-head elimination bracket to include a four-tire pit stop. And what that is, I just became really familiar with this with the Ultimate Series I work with. Top eight, once they qualify, one lap of qualifying, once they qualify, the top eight will go head-to-head in an elimination bracket. And that'll include the pit stop, so it'll include the pit crews. And then as they advance, the winner will end up on the pole. I think that was the biggest change to it. The stages, the fastest pit stop earning the top spot position for the final pit. Let me read that again. First three stages, the fastest pit stop earn the advantage with top starting position.
First three stage winners.
Okay, there we go. First three-stage winners, the fastest pit stop, earn the advantage with the top starting positions in that final stage. So that's a little bit of a change.
Pays out at $1 million.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so I think those were pretty much the changes, the prominent twist in the round-to-round qualifying with the head-to-head elimination and including the pivotal role of the pit crews.
Yeah, the stages are 25 laps for stage one, 25 laps for stage two. A special stage break and pit stop competition will take place. Each team must pit and perform a four-tire stop. The team with the shortest time on pit road, pit in and pit out, wins the pit crew award, and the driver will start fourth in the final stage as long as he finished 15th or better in stage three. Stage three, again, is 25 laps, and the winner of stage three starts third in the final stage. So stage four is 50 laps. The stage one winner starts first, stage two winner second. Stage three winner will start third. The pit stop competition winner is fourth. If a natural caution occurs between laps 15 and 25 of the last stage, the standard race procedures will be in effect. If no natural caution occurs during that time, NASCAR will call an all-star competition caution, and the winner of stage four will be the one who earns that $1 million payout. So the idea is to build up some intensity throughout the race. So the NASCAR Open opens immediately before the all-star race, and also will consist of three stages, 20 laps, 20 laps, and 10 laps. Each segment will advance to the NASCAR All-Star Race, as will the winner of the fan vote. So it sounds like four drivers that will advance. Fans can vote for their favorite driver who has not qualified for the NASCAR All-Star Race by visiting NASCAR.com for details on that. So maybe five of those race drivers will advance. Drivers eligible for the All-Star Race consist of Cup Series drivers that have earned a points-paying race victory in 21 or 22, previous All-Star winners who are competing full-time this season, and previous Cup Series champions who are competing full-time this season. So that kind of gives you a little bit more of that rundown. Any thoughts, Jay?
Yeah, it's the All-Star Race. I mean, that's the whole thing is, I know people talk about this, of the changing it every year. Again, not particularly a fan of it being at Texas Motor Speedway, but it is, so deal with it. We'll have to deal with that down the road if they change it. The format, I like the fact that they keep coming up with different ways to, as you said, pick up the intensity and make it just an absolute shootout. It's not a points race, so it is just this is an entertainment for the fans. And we've seen things that range from highlighting the cars with the lights. You know, I thought that was a great thing. They did that one time, doing this one time. And as I said, this year with the Ultimate Street Stock series that I'm working with now, this, what they referred to as the King of the Hill format. We do it where the top X number of drivers do one lap head-to-head on the track, winner advances, so you can actually be the eighth quickest and move all the way to the pole. I can't believe I had never heard or seen that. It actually can play out to be very exciting. The other thing I like, and they mentioned it on Race Hub, the pit crew being involved. We don't have the pit crew competition like we used to back in the day. So I like the fact that they incorporated that the pit crew with it, so that, again, it goes back to it as a whole team. You win as a team, and they're a part of it. So I really like it. You know, whether it plays out well or not, we'll have to see. If they keep it as a permanent thing, don't know. But I like the fact that, again, they're doing whatever they can to put on the best entertainment show for the fans, because that's what the All-Star Race is about.
And the good news is everybody is racing under the same rules. And they do have a, if you go to NASCAR.com, and I know Bob Pockrass has a graphic up as well of the entire process from practice through the Open through the All-Star Race of exactly, and qualifying. All of that is in the graphic. That makes it a little bit easier to understand what's going on. Like I say, everybody's following the same format. They're all following the same rules of the format. And this is all about having fun and enjoying the intensity of the competition. And there's a $1 million payoff, so you know every driver wants to go after that $1 million. So I think the All-Star format, and I think it's a good idea to change it up sometimes, because I know in the previous All-Star races, I've seen a little bit of what I call shenanigans going on, which is kind of hanging out at the back waiting for the end of the race. So I'd rather that they do something like this that keeps everybody engaged. We're at the time of the night, though, that I need to make a special announcement for all of our first-time listeners. We're coming to the end of the show, and we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. However, Dan and I are going to continue to talk beyond that time, and that's part of our bonus overtime material that's available on our podcast. When we're done here tonight, and we'll record all of that. When we're done here tonight, I'll go out on Twitter to let everyone know that the podcast is now available. And at that point, you can go to our player at fanforacing.com and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of that conversation. So, again, we didn't want first-time listeners to be caught off guard with us going off air mid-sentence and not know how they can hear the rest of that conversation or to be just taken off guard. So with that, Jay, any other comments that you will have to make?
Yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Some of it may become a permanent thing, some of it not. And I was thinking back, I remember being on sometime last year with Dave Moody on his show, SiriusXM Speedway. I think he calls it Wild Butt Idea Day or Free Speech Friday, one of the two where it came up, of some different things to do with the All-Star Race. And I know one of them I brought to him, you know the movie Cannonball Run, right, Sharon?
Uh-huh.
Cross-country racing. Yeah. So I said, take your drivers that are qualified, drop them off in Daytona. They got to get the rental car, go Days of Thunder rental car, and get to Charlotte. First one there gets the pole, you know, on so on. Somebody else had the idea of incorporating a dirt race with it right there at Charlotte, have them run on the dirt, set that up as far as now that thought was when it was still at Charlotte Motor Speedway, but so there's a lot of different things they can play with, and I like the fact, again, that they're thinking outside the box and doing different things to bring some excitement for the fans, for the drivers, you know, the intensity. And, it, you know, with this format, the way they've developed it, you mentioned it, seeing some of the shenanigans, as you call it. Yeah, there was some of that. We've seen that change, you know, the earning points in different stages to set up the final one makes you go to the front. And I can't help but thinking, and I know you'll remember this, when they said you had to make a pit stop prior to crossing the start-finish line. Frankie Stoddard didn't break the rules, but they made the rule because of him. When he pitted on, he didn't pit coming to the white flag, coming to the checkered, his car, Burton, came down pit road, pitted, and then rolled across the start-finish line on pit road. I mean, that was just awesome. I realize they changed the rules for a reason because of that, but at the time, that was ingenious. I loved it.
Yeah, that was with Jeff Burton. You're right. And again, that rule was put in place from that action. So I think they do need to change the rules every now and then. It does make it to where fans want to tune in to see what's going to happen. Is this going to be better than last year? Is this something that we want to keep going forward? Because it's a big hit. I like the thinking out of the box idea as well, because that creates a lot of conversation about what's coming up. People have things that they like and things that they don't like, and it opens the window for NASCAR to think out of the box and come up with some new ideas. I like the fan input though too, with Dan Moody's radio show. So that's pretty cool, and I've seen some ideas on Twitter as well. So you never know. It's always fun.
Well, I got to say, Quentin just messaged me. He chimed in. He said, make Dave Despain the MC. So that'd be interesting.
Possibly. Okay, what's up next?
Let's see. What else do we have here? No, that was one I definitely wanted to do. They announced the format today. We talked about this one, the television deal. Let's see, what do you got here under all that? Oh, you got it as two separate. Okay. Bob Pockrass announced on Twitter the television deal is broken down so that 90% of the TV money goes to the Cup, 9% to Xfinity, and 1% to the trucks. It used to be 93.75 to Cup prior to 2015. Which is why the Cup purses were so much greater.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised at those stats on how that's broken down. I get why the Cup Series gets a greater percentage, but I really thought that I think there could be some real advantage to giving more to the Xfinity and the Truck Series as well. 1% for the Truck Series. I guess it comes down to viewership is the reason why those stats are the way that they are. So I guess if we want those stats to go up, we have to make sure a lot more people are watching those races and filling the seats in the stands for those races. So again, I think there's a reason why it is the way it is. But I thought it was a little shocking to see the numbers at what they were. I thought that there would be more for the Xfinity and the Truck Series than what there is.
Well, and you're right. I'm sure they got their crack mathematicians and analytics working on it. I don't know if Owen's a part of that, but I would think, too, you could disperse it maybe a little bit better. You mentioned... First off, I understand that the Cup Series is the premier level. So like you said, you know, you understand the majority of it going there. And also they want to see full field of competitive cars, okay? They've taken a step with the next-gen car as far as that. So there's a couple of things that play into that of how they're making that happen. But when we look at the Xfinity or the Truck Series, we see a lot more unsponsored teams and that are running at the back are unsponsored. So maybe dispersing a little bit more, dividing that up just a little bit more, as you said, putting more than 1% into the truck series, we'd see more of that. And then, like you said, the viewership and attendance as far as those series obviously would reflect that. So there are some things we can do as fans, but I think there are some things that NASCAR could do. Like I said, just tweak it a little bit to put a little bit more in their pot.
Yeah, I think that there could be some major benefits for the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series if they could get a little bit more of that money. But that explains why the purse size is so much bigger for the Cup Series than it is for the other two series. The problem with making those adjustments at this stage of the game, though, is that those Cup Series drivers are used to those big purse monies. So they would have to take less money at NASCAR's premier top level series in order to make more money available to the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series. Whether the drivers would be open to that is a big question in making that move. So just a word of caution there. But I do think if they can get more viewership and more fans in the seats, maybe those numbers could go up enough that they could make a little more concessions there.
Yeah, it's one of those, just that we just talked about with the All-Star race or anything, the schedule, you know, open it up to where are we looking at it the best way and what kind of adjustments can be made. I'm not saying change it wholesale, but just tweak it a little bit, you know. We've seen that in the one that pops to my mind when they said, okay, Cup drivers can only run 10 races. Well, they tweaked it. Now they found their happy spot with 5, or at least from NASCAR's standpoint. You know, they did it 3 years in a row where they adjusted it a little bit. They tried something. They said, okay, we need to go this way. So, yeah, maybe try that, up it a little bit, and see if that boosts the overall effect on the series, for the Truck Series and Xfinity. And when you hit that spot where you feel like you've got them rolling, then you'll leave it at that point. So, you're right. The numbers were a little bit shocking. I wouldn't have realized it was that big, or even that much bigger back prior to what was 2015, where it was 93% that went to. So we've seen that. I mean, it obviously they tweaked it then. Maybe it is time to, with what we've seen in the trucks in Xfinity. You and I talked about this. Some of the best battles in on-track racing come from those two series. So maybe it is time to reevaluate again and tweak just a little bit.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with that. And I like, it sounds like you're right. That does look like they have made a couple of tweaks here from 2015. But that was, 7 years ago? So it's certainly time to maybe look at that and maybe make a couple more tweaks. Maybe there were other tweaks in between. I don't know. I'm just basing it on the information that we have on this tweet from Bob Pockris. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, maybe they can think out of the box on this one, too. Okay. I guess along with that, is the attendance. Adam Stern said that, I guess it's two different tweets here, Fox earned a 2.61 rating and 4.682 million viewers for Sunday's Geico 500 in Talladega. That's down 1% from last year in viewership, which is at 2.81 and 4.7 million viewers. Meanwhile, the Xfinity race on Saturday got a 2.061 million viewers. That's the most for any event in the series since Daytona of 2017. So that's kind of interesting that the Xfinity series had a bump while the Cup Series had a little bit of a drop. Along with that, Adam Stern reported that Talladega saw a crowd of around 60,000 people in the grandstands for the Geico 500, along with 1,000 more thousands more in sold-out campgrounds per sources. So that seems like a jump for attendance at Talladega. It doesn't say how much of a jump, but I know Mike has a fan at the track article that we posted today, and he felt like it was the most people he's seen at the track in quite a long time before the pandemic. So it did seem like there was an awful lot of people in the stands at Talladega this weekend, and that's not counting the people that were enjoying it from the campground as well.
Yeah, we got two different things we're dealing with there. The TV numbers are always due to that contract that we just mentioned and getting viewerships and a new TV package deal done. You know, that's one aspect of it to it. I don't know how to go about that by any means. I think the at-track attendance, we're going to see, we've seen that with both the Bristol race. Granted, it was a night race at Bristol and on dirt, which has been in its second year. But we saw big jumps as far as that. Part of that, again, as the COVID situation and the pandemic, I don't say we've cleared it or come out of it, but it is improving. So to see those numbers climbing back up, hopefully that is being happening consistently at all tracks, all venues, both local and at the national level. The TV numbers, like I said, I don't know about the Xfinity versus Cup. I'm not sure, like I said, I can't even begin to fathom trying to understand people or what their thought process is when it comes to stuff like that. I enjoy all of it. So, like I said, to me, I'm not sure what would draw that. But a 1% change, that's not a huge, to me anyway, I'm sure to somebody it's very important, what they call the bean counters. It's very important, but 1% change isn't a huge in my opinion. You know, now if we're dropping 5-10%, then we got an issue because then it's not being fulfilling what we want as far as entertainment and drawing the crowd.
And I would say that 1% would certainly be made up by people being at the track versus at home watching on TV. Talladega did do a great promotion of the race, I think, with the competition with Jeffrey Earnhardt being in that number three car at RCR and bringing, Larry McReynolds in as the crew chief for Earnhardt. And they delivered with that second place finish, I thought. It would have been great if he had a first place finish, but he made some great moves in order to get to that second place finish. And the fans loved it. So I would guess that a lot of those fans will be back for the next Talladega race. And I love that NASCAR is doing these promotions. That's what they need to do to continue to get more fans at the track. And I know I've heard Mike comment about NASCAR advertising itself during the commercials, during races. But I think it's good that they're doing that. That's what's getting people excited about coming to some of these upcoming races and knowing how they can get tickets for some of these upcoming races. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, Mike and I go back and forth on this. I understand it is, again, taking away from the on-track racing, but that it's required. I mean, that's what, I don't know how else to say it. You know, that's what it is. You know, there's a lot of times, too, you hear people say, oh, I'd have gone to that if I'd have known about it. I didn't see any advertisement. So, I'll just throw an example out there. If you're going to advertise, say, during the wrestling show, well, if you're not a wrestling fan, you're not going to see it. If you're a race fan, you're going to see it because it's talking about their next race. So, you know, from that aspect, it makes sense. Now, you want to target a new audience. So, yeah, there's something to be said for advertising in other locations or something. But, I mean, to get, especially for at-track information out to the fans you know are invested, what better place than during the race, you know, or while you have their attention anyway.
Absolutely. I really think that's fantastic. I noticed Talladega, they're promoting the race at Kansas Speedway. And I thought, this is really good because people who are watching this race are thinking, oh, that's how I can get tickets for Kansas. Or if they didn't go to Talladega and they're watching it on TV, they're thinking, oh, man, that looked like a lot of fun at Talladega. Let me see if I can get tickets for Kansas. I think it's brilliant, and I see no problem with it at all. And like I say, I really think being 1% down on the TV ratings may have something to do with the fact that so many fans, so many more fans were actually in the track watching instead of being at home watching it on the TV.
You would think they go hand in hand, yes. So, you know, that change there hopefully does equate to the at track versus the on TV, like you mentioned.
Okay, what's up next, Jay?
All right, I had it here. Oh, why does that keep shutting down on me? There it is. The playoff bubble. We talked about this earlier in the show. The 2022 NASCAR playoffs, is it time for drivers on the bubble to stress?
Yeah, that's a good one. There's an article here by Bob Pockrass. He says, Chris Buescher admits that he just looked at where he sat in the point standings last week, but he figures that worrying about points isn't all that productive early in the season. But at this point of the season, it's important to know where you are because that one position can make a big difference when it comes down to that cut line. Some of these points battles are pretty darn close.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You start with Daytona. All right, that's an event in and of itself. Yes, it counts for points, but those are events of themselves. Then you get into the beginning of the season, feeling your car out, feeling your team, a lot of changes from the offseason every year, no matter what the situation is. So about four or five races in, we're a little over that now, but that's where you got to start being aware of it. I'm not saying stress yet, but you got to be aware of it. If you are not winning races and not locked in, yes, you got to be aware of it and what your position is. Now, we talked about the points bubble right now being Tyler Reddick on the outside. He has been running up front. Feel like that win is right there. He's going to knock it down. I wouldn't be as concerned with him. But there's a couple further back. If you're already outside the top 20, you're obviously looking at the win because you know that points gap is getting bigger and bigger. You know, Brad Keselowski, he knows he's not pointing his way in at this point. He's got to be focused on a win. So for him, it's win or not. Some of them might still be a little bit more points racing than all-out win. Like I said, aware of it, concerned about it, or keeping an eye on it, but not necessarily stressing about it. And that, like I said, about race five, between five and ten.
Well, I'll tell you where else it can make a big difference. I remember Carl Edwards coming in second quite a few times in one year. In particular, I think he tied with Tony Stewart, but Tony Stewart got the championship based on the wins that he was able to get, and he had no wins during the regular season, but he railed off 5 wins in 10 races during the playoffs, and that was a huge difference. So those points mean a lot no matter where you are on that playoff point standings. They talk about the current playoff bubble is bigger at this point than it has been in the past, from 14th to 17th in the standings. Just 11 points separate those on the edge. Kevin Harvick plus 10, Dylan plus 3, and Christopher Bell plus 1, along with Tyler Reddick, who's at negative 1. So that's how tight it is right at the bubble. What's more, 7 drivers are within one race.
Run and hide with
60 points of the bubble. Reddick again back 1, Jones back 12, Bush negative 25, Daniel Suarez also negative 25, Buescher at negative 47, Bubba Wallace negative 50, and Justin Haley negative 60. So Denny Hamlin, owner of Busch and Wallace Cars, isn't telling his drivers that they have to win to make the playoffs and eye on those points, because one car position at the end of the race can be a huge difference when you see drivers within just a few points of one another. So every point makes a huge, huge difference. And it's not just at the cut line, like I said. It's also up at the top, especially as you go into the playoffs. And you could lose it by just that one point. Even if you're tied, you could lose it based on your actual results.
Well, and I know a lot of drivers say that if you run well, the points will take care of itself. But there are times, and we've seen that. You mentioned a couple. Jimmy Johnson going for the win versus riding where he was at and taking the points way in. But that also, it's a balance because, again, risk versus reward. The playoff points, most certainly, because that's how you get into the championship. You mentioned that tie between Carl Edwards and Tony Stewart, a huge one that we've talked about for, what, that's been 10-plus years now, hasn't it? So, yeah, they are very valuable, and you always want to be aware of them. And I think that especially with the stage wins, we've seen that change. And that, again, was the intent, to bump up the intensity during mid-race, you know, middle part of the race, as well as then benefit was the fan interest because they are racing door-to-door, not, as you said, riding around the track. So, yeah, it's a risk versus reward. You got to be aware of it at all times. You know, the concern and stress about it, I say at this point in the season. But the other factor I think about it, though, is the point situation. As we get multiple more new winners, that adds stress because that means there's less and less spots. So depending on how many repeat winners or whatever we have, that changes where their focus is at. The multiple winners, then you got to focus on how many bonus points are they building up you're not going to have.
Exactly. And I think it depends on where you are in the point standings as well. The article brings up Reddick and Dillon feeling confident because between them they have 3 second place finishes. In 10 races this year, Dillon, who SummerSlam last year dropped him out of the playoff picture, has more top fives this season, 3, than he did in all of 2021 when he had just 1. That has him focused on a win, but not stressing too much about points. So depending on where you are, some people are more focused on getting that win so that they can get the playoff points versus, you know, that one or two positions better. We're in a better position overall as far as speed that we're taking to the track during that time frame last year. We were consistent, but we didn't have the speed that we've had this year. So I feel pretty good. We've got to capitalize on stage points to make the big surge and focus on qualifying a little bit more to try to be consistent. So he's talking about qualifying, and those stage points is where their focus is, where other drivers are saying they're looking at other things. So it's interesting to kind of see how everybody's got a different approach.
You're right. Where you're at with your season most certainly does affect where your focus is going to be or what you feel your need is. Like I mentioned, and I couldn't remember who the other one was there, Austin Dillon, Andy Petrie talked about it in the race-up. Both of them, knowing that they've been right there for a victory a couple times this year, yeah, they're not going to be as concerned as far as maybe pointing their way in at this point. That could change. I mentioned it, 1 point difference between Tyler Reddick and Dillon. Well, Reddick was that close to getting the victory at Bristol. At Talladega, he finished at the back because he broke in stage one. Just in 2 weeks of how much that changed. You know, he really thought he was going to get a win, lock himself in. Now he's got a parts failure or something breaks and he has a bad finish. Now he's on the bubble looking at, okay, what do I need to get in? So that can change from week to week.
That is so true. That's why these next, we're 10 races in, There's 16 more races in the regular season. Only three more races to get us to the halfway point of the regular season. So a lot of drivers, that's when they're going to be evaluating, is when they get to that halfway point. And we've said it, a lot of these drivers that have struggled during these first 10 races, by the time we get to race 14, they will have learned a lot. And I think we'll be seeing different results from them in the second half of the season. And that comes from the not only the learning curve that they're going through in the first half of the season, but that also comes from evaluating where they are in the playoff points and the point standings. So it is important to know exactly where you are. I've never understood drivers saying that they don't look at the points or they're not worried about the points. I think at some point you have to make that analysis in order to move forward.
Well, and I think maybe, and we'll just finish it, wrap up with this, because it is such a topic. You know, the drivers, I mean, their job is to drive. I think that's where it comes down to the team, maybe, you know, the crew chief and the team owner may be a little more aware of it because they're at the end. And we've seen this in different races when it comes to advancing. And I think back to that same race that Jimmy Johnson had the situation. It was Kyle Larson's crew. They were the ones on the radio saying, hey, you need to get by this car. You need to pick up three positions, you know, in these final laps. So, yeah, the drivers maybe not as much, you know, and I'm not – they're a part of the team, but they're focused on the driving part. Yeah, then the crew says, hey, you know, don't push too hard. We got 5 points or five positions we can play with, so don't overdrive the car, and coach the driver on doing his job to relate to the point. So, yeah, I'd probably put that more on the team, like I said, the crew chief. Now, you know, you mentioned it. We always say the driver – ask a crew chief or the team owner if they're aware of the points. Their answer might be a little different, you know, especially we talk about it, you know, you in the playoffs, you somebody. If you're not, you're the – if we have time, we'll talk about it. I know Race Hub does that in non-playoff news during the playoffs. They have non-playoff news. They highlight somebody, you know, that's not in the playoffs because, yeah, you're not going to get the coverage.
Yes, exactly. You bring up a really good point. A lot of times it maybe not so much the driver. As long as they know their spotter and their crew chief knows what's going on, they know they're going to be coached in a race where they need to be. So that is a good point. And again, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how this continues to play out. We've got a lot of racing left. Three more races to that halfway more part, as I mentioned, and then 13 more races after that to get to the final race of the regular season. And that's where we crown the regular season champion, by the way, before the playoffs begin in the last 10 races of the season. So I've enjoyed the racing so far this year, Jay, a whole lot.
Oh, it has been absolutely great. We talked about the next-gen car and the parity we've seen. Even though in the Xfinity and trucks, we haven't seen – last year we saw John Hunter Nemechek kind of be dominant early in the season anyway. We haven't seen that in any of the series. We've had a good mixture. And I tell you what, I meant to say it during the earlier portion when it comes to the dash for cash. If I were a driver – I know the win is there, but I'd look to be finishing third. Every dash for cash winner so far has finished third.
Yes, it's pretty amazing. We've seen a lot of drivers who have won from that third place finish too, coming to the checkered flag. They're in third place, and then something happens to the top two, and they sail on to the win. So that third place position is kind of a good spot to be.
That's where you want to be if you're going to back your way into a win, I guess.
I guess so. Okay, let's do our round table or across the table. Where are you going to be this weekend?
As I said earlier on Monday, I'm going to actually be at home, but still going to the track.
Oh, that's
right. Stay at home for 2 days this weekend and 2 weeks. This weekend, Columbus Speedway, the baddest bullring in the South, going to do some go-kart racing. A new venture for me as far as calling go-kart racing. I got a lot of friends, a lot of youth, especially from the church that are involved in that. So looking forward to that. And then next weekend as well, I'll be right here at the bullring as the XR1 Southern All-Stars Super Late Model Series. And Dwayne Keith coming to town with them. He's one I'm trying to work out how to get him on the show because he's not available on Thursday night. He's one I asked about maybe doing a pre-record for. But, yeah, he'll be in town. I take that back. That's not until June. That's a regular show.
Oh, okay.
Man, I got excited. I will still be at the bullring, but, yeah, I got to wait another month before the super late models get here.
Okay. Yeah, if we can do pre-recordings. I've been thinking about doing that with Roger Carruth because he's got, NASCAR iRacing that he's doing on Thursday nights. And we've had a hard time kind of finding a spot for him to be on the show. So we might have to do a pre-recording. And I was looking back at that. We've done that with him before because of the iRacing. So hopefully we'll be able to do that sometime in May. If you didn't hear our interview with Nick Sanchez earlier tonight, I encourage you to go back and listen during the second half hour of the show. He won at Talladega Super Speedway last week in the ARCA Menards Series. It was his second win after winning at Kansas in the season finale last year. And we're headed to Kansas next week for the ARCA Menards Series. Or coming up in May, I guess, not next week, but coming up in May, they'll be going to Kansas Speedway. So we got to talk to him about his thoughts after, coming to the checkered flag at Talladega and winning there. But we also got to talk to him about the upcoming race coming up at Kansas. So, and I know, Jay, you asked him some really great questions as well about racing in the ARCA Menards Series. So we're looking forward, definitely look forward to hearing that interview. Also, coming up on Monday, we have Christian Rose from Cook Racing Technologies coming back on the show. We're going to be able to talk to him after racing at Dover Motor Speedway in the ARCA East and get his thoughts about that race on Monday night starting at 9 o'clock. So looking forward to that as well. Again, I always like to do a shout-out to our listeners for tuning in, whether it's on the live broadcast or the podcast. We appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say. We have a lot of fun doing the show for everybody on Mondays and Thursday nights, and we hope you enjoy it as much as hearing it as much as we enjoy doing it. Also, to Jay Huseman, you're our fan for racing crew here tonight for both the preview part of the show as well as our Hot Topic sound off here tonight. So thank you, Jay. We appreciate all that you do, and I look forward to doing it with you again next Thursday night for our preview show on next Thursday night as well as for our Hot Topics on Monday night. So with that, I think we're ready to say good night. Unless you have something more you want to say.
Yeah, no, I just got to say you're right. I absolutely do enjoy doing it. I love it. And I appreciate the opportunity you give us, me, Mike, Andy, Owen, Tommy, James, and Sal, that platform. You know, we couldn't do it without you. So I want to thank you. And we'll be back again next week, Monday for Hot Topics and then Thursday for the entire program.
Okay. Thank you, Jay. And good night, everybody. Good night. We'll see you on the other side of Dover.